I worked there for 6 months, praying, believing that I would be removed. In hindsight, Jesus was setting me up.
All of our disappointments in life.
Unhealthy expectations. I let my clients know immediately, you're going to go off and do this on your own.
Welcome to Catch the Moment podcast. I am your host, David Tyree.
It is caught by Tyree. That's a great catch by David Tyree. Goes up for it like a basketball.
Welcome back to Catch the Moment podcast. It's your host, David Tyree. Super excited today. We always talk about pain, process, and journey, but there's instrumental people along the way that actually have to help us get to those places. And that's where we really try to give you some insight and how to overcome and get you to your next moment, your next point of success. Today, I'm here with mother, friend, drug and alcohol certified. Certified in so much, but really a specialist in the area of mental health, drug and alcohol rehabilitation, Sasha Brands. So thrilled to finally have you on the pod. How you doing?
I'm so excited. I'm doing well.
Listen, man, ain't she a great ball? Just a great beam of light in life. Look at that smile. Look at those teeth. Wouldn't you want to be counseled by Sasha? No, everything well?
Everything is well, yes.
I'm super excited to have you on and talk about this space. When we talk about this mental health space altogether, right? And I know you have some special background and certifications that are specific. We're going to get into your professional journey, but you know, it's always first order of business. You know, I know what I'm known for. I know my moment of adoration. And I know you're not, actually, you got some athlete pedigree. So we're going to talk about that too. Yes. You do have some athlete pedigree. She workout game is real vicious.
She's
on IG. Where were you the first time you ever saw the helmet catch? And what are any memories that you might have from it or any thoughts?
Oh, man, I was at Rutgers.
You was at Rutgers.
I was at Rutgers, and I remember I was a fake Giants fan because, you know, when you live in the state, you're like, oh, whatever team my state roots for, I'm going to root for that.
No doubt.
So I became a Giants fan because everyone in college was a Giants fan.
Of course, representing.
So I remember going to a college party, a little Super Bowl. I'm like, oh, let me have fun. Yep. So I remember going, and I had no idea who was even playing. I really didn't.
You didn't even know who was really even in the Super Bowl.
I didn't. I was just going for the fun time.
Going for good times. You out there. Now, you was at Rutgers, New Brunswick?
Yes.
Okay, nice.
The party school.
Big party school.
Party school.
It's a few different campuses, but that's where it's going down.
That's where it's going down.
Gotcha.
So I went, and the guy that I was talking to at the time, he was a huge Giants fan. So I was like, okay, all right, I'm getting in there. I was working my way. So I remember that catch, and everyone went crazy, jumped, like literally running through, through the residential hall, like banging on things. And I think there was a moment where I just thought, wait, what just happened? And I really didn't know about it until I met you. I was like, oh, that was the guy everyone was jumping about. It makes sense now.
Makes sense now. That's fantastic. See, that's listen, I'm out here, grown man, but you're in college, laying the foundation. And obviously, we definitely got to get into some of your background and story. The irony that I'm actually representing Syracuse today, we used to play Rutgers. Those were the good old glory Big East days in my day. Mm-hmm. Go Cuse. Respect to the home state, home university.
Yes.
All right, so it was love over at Rutgers.
Yes.
Excellent. That's fantastic. So I appreciate you sharing that because it's always cool, right? And obviously, that's a moment for me. But you're a native New Jersey. I actually just rolled up on your high school for the first time recently at West Orange High. Essex County. So the pedigree is already here. Yes. I just want to set the record straight. This is Essex County pedigree. I talk a lot about our beloved county and state. What was, we're going to get to some of your marquee moments, but what was life like growing up? Because you're in this mental health in general.
Yes.
It's very comprehensive. But you're in the space where this is the topic of the day, right? And needed. And then there's like a real convoluted element sometimes as well.
Yes.
So, but what was life like for you kind of like formatively, mom, parents, growing up, whatever. What was it like that kind of shaped you in your worldview and your journey?
Awesome. So I grew up in Newark.
Okay. From the Bricks.
Yes. Listen, I'm from the Bricks. My mom's from the Lower East Side, but she ended up moving to Jersey when
she was
young.
Okay, so she got some New York pedigree.
New York in there. And my dad wasn't around. I mean, like most of us, as a kind of, he was around, but he wasn't. I knew who he was, and
so I met Pops, cool dude, but you know, Pop had a little Rolling Stone.
He was a Rolling Stone.
We get real.
He was really rolling too. He was in Jersey, Maryland, and North Carolina. That's where all of his children are.
Man,
right? So there's nine of us.
He was dropping off the sea.
I love him.
Listen, and that's the beautiful place as we grow, right?
Yes. I love that guy. I really do.
Yeah.
So my mom has five of her own, even though my dad has nine. And she was just a single mom. That's all, you know, trying to figure it out on her own. She had five children by the age of 25. And I mean, when I think about it, I had mine my first at 25. Ooh. I can't imagine having five.
Shabba dabba doo.
I think back and I'm like, how did she? What? I'm 25 with my first son. Like, mom, what were you doing? Listen. I love her. Also, someone I look up to because she really did it.
Yeah.
She did it. I mean,
big respect, mom.
I love her. She got us all through college. I think she really laid the foundation for us. Like, she went back to college as a mom of five.
Went back to college as a mother of five.
Did nursing, became a nurse.
She's
now doing a PhD program. Like, my mom is the mom.
It's Delilah. Like, Mama Delilah. We love you, Mama Delilah.
I love her.
Oh, she's my fantastic. Goodness. And those are the, like I said, we, and I think it's so important to shape, like, many of us grow up, none of us get to choose our families, right? None of us get to choose our parents. And obviously we start maturing as adults and we start, you know, finding our way into better. But we don't have to despise,
right?
You know, hopefully we can grow. And you're, like I said, so we got some New York spices, New York City. We got some formative, not the ideal circumstances,
right?
But you got the pedigree that was able to create an environment for you. At what point do you kind of, like, obviously Newark is the epicenter of really the state of New Jersey in general. It's definitely been revitalized, but it's like I said, it's urban, it's tough, it's challenges. When do you move through to West Orange, and like what kind of gives your life shape? I know you were involved in sports. What is giving your life shape? And like I said, we young and dumb, so I'm not excusing from, you know, feel free to share some of the traps, the loopholes.
Yes.
As you were making your way as a young.
My mom ended up getting found, literally. OBGYN, my stepfather, Mark, fantastic man. I was just sharing with my husband how he really shaped us, I would say, in the marketplace. He had he moved us out of Newark. We lived in Bloomfield, and then they ended up buying a house in West Orange.
Nice.
So we moved originally from Bloomfield when I was nine. So we were in Bloomfield for about 2-3 years.
Got you.
And then we moved to West Orange. Uh-huh. So by the time I got to high school, I went to West Orange High.
West Orange High.
So my stepfather, listen, fantastic guy, OBGYN. He was like, what you're going to do is volunteer, do this. You want to be a veterinarian? Okay, go to the animal shelters. Go work under a veterinarian. Like, he really shaped our careers from the beginning. And my mom, she literally took under that as well.
Wow.
She went back to school. She did the nursing. Like, he shaped that as well, part of it. And I bless him. Like, my stepfather's fantastic. Even though they're not married anymore. Family's family.
Listen, life, there you go. But it shows the powerful direction, right? And obviously he was a professional, right? OBGYN, we're talking about. It's a doctor, right?
Yes, he was a doctor.
So we talk about a well-educated man with insight, direction, goals, and accomplishments. And I think it speaks to the stability that sobriety can bring to a home and a family, the direction, especially from a man. A man plays a different role.
It does,
And a single mom is a champion. But, you know, when you get that male direction, the affirmation, that kind of insight, it could bring a lot of stability. So you get it formed. Now, what kind of athletics did you have going on? Because you a workout champion. I'm like, you know, now, just for full transparency, you know, 2B Media is partnered with Catch the Moment Podcast. You know, this is the wife of Burnell Brent. So, we, anybody who checks our pod recently, we know Burnell. So, And Burnell, he would like to believe he was an athlete, right? Like, so, but you are a much greater representation of athleticism.
We're holding it down for the branches. I'm holding it down for the branches, okay?
I had to throw some shots. I'm shooting. But So what's the you work out more than anybody consistently. I'm like, what she gonna do is check the box.
Yes.
Okay. What she gonna do is something. Yes. So I give you salute. I've been out here in these athletic streets. I'm like, Sasha's crushing me. I'm like, so how has that become a part of your wellness, health? Like, talk about that, because people are missing all these elements when it comes to social and emotional and physical health. So I, you know, my saying is be well, do well. And you got a good splice of it. You know, sometimes I think you might be a little excessive. I don't know. I don't we're going to talk about that too.
Yeah, we'll talk about it. So my mom, being a mom of five.
Sure.
You're not going to run me crazy. What you're going to do is.
What you going to do?
You're going to get into some sports.
Yeah.
I just was that child out of the five. I just didn't know what to do. So I did everything. I was in the marching band. I played basketball, and I ran track.
The marching band.
I was in the color guard. I was flipping them flags. Yeah, dancing. I was like, you know what? What I can do is dance. I'm gonna flip these flags. So I did everything, and I just continued. And I think there was a point in my life where I looked at the sickness in my family, the diabetes, the high blood pressure, the overweight, and I thought for a moment, I'm not gonna be that. So, like, for me, genetically, my dad is 6'5". He's tall. He's lanky.
Yeah.
He's unhealthy. It doesn't matter. Like, it doesn't matter just what you look like. And I just thought about that prudently. I need to do well.
Yeah.
And I tie that right into my business. Really just, it's what I love to call wellness recovery.
Nice.
It's everything. It's mental. It's emotional. It's spiritual. It's physical. It's all of that tied together.
Excellent.
So when I think about what makes, people ask me all the time, why are you so consistent? Because my life depends on it. Ooh. I mean, it may be this much, but
my life
depends on
it. Give it to him. Give
okay?
it to him. Give
it depends on it. I have to wake up and go run. Yeah. I have to wake up and pray. I have to wake up and emotionally get my life together because I have three children and a husband, and then I have a private practice and their emotions all over.
That's right.
I have to. If I'm not
your
correct,
husband looking for you, he needs you to have some energy.
Exactly. So I get my energy in the morning at 5 a.m. Yes. And then it sustains me. And sometimes I burn out, but I try to come back.
Yeah, you were early. You like to go.
Before I got married, 9:30.
Deuces.
That's it.
God bless you.
Now I have to.
Yeah, you got.
I got to make it work.
Your life is not your own.
It's not. I got to make it to 11 at least. 11, 10:30.
Yeah.
My husband strives at 10:30 and later.
And beyond. He got an unhealthy appetite with the night, but we love him.
We do.
We love him. We out here loving people. We out here surviving. We out here getting better. And that's the whole. So in athletics, so I know you ran a little track.
I did.
Were you decent? Were you okay?
I was regionally ranked.
Regionally ranked?
High jump, triple jump, and long jump.
Okay, so you was a jumper.
I was an athlete.
Put some respect on my name.
Listen, I was regionally ranked.
Yeah, I like it.
I didn't meet the mark to join Rutgers.
I got you.
I was like, yeah.
But you know what? Okay. It was a good wholesome experience. Because I'm like, you know, obviously you got good genetics. You're out here getting life done. Now, talk about some of the challenge. Like, okay, now we I don't want to say we didn't gloss over anything. Mm-hmm. When we talk about those teen years and formative years, moving through college even, those are like emotionally vulnerable times, right? So what were the traps that you endured? Mm-hmm. And I know that you're a Christian, you're like you've found stability in your faith. But what were some of the traps, the loopholes, the seasons of anxiety or depression as a young, vulnerable woman out here in these streets? And I know a little bit of history. I know you were a little boisterous too. I say boisterous, like, Sasha ain't afraid. You know, like
right, I'm not.
Like, so what were some of the traps for you as in those formative years before you really got stable?
I think it was, there were a lot of traps, and I can't really say I endured them well. Now, when I look back, I'm like, wow, I did not do a lot of enduring in college. So my family moved to New Mexico when I was in college, literally. My mom,
New Mexico?
New
like
Mexico.
Across the country?
Yes. So my stepfather got a position as an OBGYN. They're paying him almost double, triple out in the West. And he had my two sisters and myself, three of us in college. And he was paying out of pocket for that.
Ooh.
So he's like, hey, ooh, we're going to make this business decision, family decision. We're going to move across the country.
Sure.
And you guys visit when you can. And I feel like my formative years, we missed out on a good chunk, and we fell into a lot of traps, me and my sisters. And man, when I think back now, I didn't endure well. There were so many times where I saw something, like, for example, my mom had kickbacks when I was younger.
Kickbacks.
Like hanging out at the house, drinking.
Yeah, okay,
all
gotcha.
I knew.
Yeah, yeah.
All I knew.
So, it was a big so. The alcohol,
yes.
being vulnerable to some of those those traps. Obviously, when we're impaired, we make poor decisions, right?
Absolutely.
We can state the obvious, being like, and what were the enticements, right? Everybody, we talk about temptations, things that might not be best for us that we grow. What were the enticements and temptations that you felt maybe left you as a deficit, and as you're growing into as an adult, where you're like, man, I'm a little jacked up here. What were the big traps for you that you had to heal from social, you know, emotionally?
I would say college. That ruined me.
Got you.
That's where I became a big alcoholic.
Mm.
I mean, Rutgers was a party school,
of course.
But
I was a binge drinker. I was a blackout artist, so we could keep like I'm.
Yes,
I get straight to it. I'm like,
yes.
Man, I would wake up. Mud on my boots, don't know what happened the night before. So, I mean, like, everybody doesn't have to have those extremes, but we're talking about being young and dumb,
right?
Making poor decisions. So,
those are some of my experiences.
Gotcha.
Literally, I continued that after college. I don't know how I got through my master's program because I wouldn't even say I was a binge drinker. I would wake up and have a Wendy's cup of iced tea with some liquor in it.
In the morning.
Because I work from 3 to 11. I said, oh, I have time. I have time to sober it up. I have time. And I will write papers. I had my boyfriend at the time writing my papers. I was like, I'm sorry.
And she was pimping out the dudes.
Listen, I was pimping them out.
She's reformed. She's wonderful. She's a handmaiden of God, but she was pimping out some dudes in college.
Just listen, do my papers.
Got a pass. We got BC Sasha Branch.
Yes. So that I missed out on that. Like, I missed out on, that's why now when my children go to college, we're going to have those conversations.
It's good.
Because it was a lot of peer pressure.
Sure.
Everyone's doing it, and you want to fit in. You want to fit in. I want to be the girl with the midriff out, and my heels on, and my nails, and going to parties with no jacket.
Working.
Just
working.
Basically working. But at the time, I was, I was just cute. I wasn't working the streets. You couldn't tell me I was working the streets. I was just trying to look like everyone else.
Yeah. Yeah. Listen, this is a real, like I said, sometimes we have to normalize human behavior, right? Like acceptance, belonging, you know, and even when we consider peer pressure, there's healthy peer pressure, there's negative peer pressure. And when we don't have a proper sight or values or a true sense of identity and worth, right? And I think that from the highest level that comes from God, but you know, when we're missing fathers, when we're missing people who can affirm us, keep us, it's challenging. It's like,
absolutely.
You know, it's like the lion is out there ready to devour. So, and like I said, I was a devourer. I was a wholesale devourer. We talk about college days. I'm looking for prey.
Yes.
Right. So obviously I'm raising daughters. I'm like, Negro, please. We strapped up with the word and the heat.
Yes. We need both. We need both.
And meaning like not to threaten, meaning like, but to protect.
Yes.
And I think that's part of the role of a healthy family, family system. So let's pivot. Like, what are you studying at Rutgers? I mean, like, Rutgers is slept on in relation to the quality of education, but I know what you do professionally, but what do you study? What do you walk away? What kind of degree do you walk away? You obviously maverick. Your mental makeup.
Yes.
Is, yeah, like, You out here getting it done. Work your way through a master's program.
Yes.
What do you walk away from Rutgers with, and what do you move into the marketplace as?
So I went to Rutgers to become a veterinarian, right?
Wow.
So I went and I studied animals all my life. That's what I wanted to be when I grew up.
So what was your favorite? Like, what
horses.
Drew you? Horses.
When you said the rider boots, I said, that's what I want.
She's a rider.
I just want a horse. I did equine science as a minor, did psych as a minor. The reason why I did psych as a minor is because I was failing my classes and I needed easy classes to boost my GPA up. Because
I think I failed psychology in college. Talking about easy classes, I'm
easy,
like,
hey.
I think I almost failed nutrition. I'm like, they tricked us with a couple classes.
I needed those classes. And then when I graduated, I had a 2.8. There was no way for me to get into veterinary school.
Sheesh.
So I said, you know what? I'm going to go do a master's.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm going to prove to any veterinary school that I could do graduate work.
Yeah.
So I went on and I got my master's in addictions counseling because it was short.
Yeah.
I was like, all right, I'm going to veterinary school.
Yeah.
in my thinking I was a Christian, thinking I was going to church with my son's father. Yeah. We had sex one time. I got pregnant. Then we were like, well, just going to continue.
So you had
sex.
A one-hitter quitter.
One-hitter quitter.
Okay. Before I get into your professional journey, we got to go into the mind of that moment, right? Because, you know, especially in the realm of the faith community, we understand that children aren't accidents, right? But we obviously, when you don't plan for something, there's a tremendous emotional and honestly, it's a burden on every level, right? Yes. And so, what was that? So, because now you ain't talking about like we out here in these streets. We out here committing sin. We out here, you know, giving ourselves away, and that has its own consequences, for lack of better terms. But now we talk about I give myself one time and.
Because he told me he was a Christian at the time. Through my depression in college, I was like, I don't think sleeping around is working out for me.
So you came to some conclusions at some point.
You know what? It's not working out. I think as we get through the college years and we're graduating 23-year-olds, and as a 23-year-old, I'm sorry, we're like, marriage, children. We start to think about those
things.
Start
thinking, that's right.
So I decided I was going to be celibate. And then I meet him, and he's like, oh, I'm celibate?
Yeah.
I'm like, oh. We can do this.
Look at you.
Let's do this together. So we're hashtagging courtship on Facebook and Instagram. Yeah. We're hashtagging Christian couples. And we did good for a while. Mm-hmm. But then that one time.
Mm.
And I'm Hispanic. I'm going to get pregnant. I mean, let's be honest.
I can attest to that.
Yes.
My wife is half Puerto Rican, half black. And she is fertile myrtle. Okay.
I got pregnant.
Man.
3 months into my pregnancy, he says, I don't think this is going to work out.
Wow.
3 months. And then I quickly understood in a moment, wow, I'm becoming a single mom. Just like my mom.
Man.
And I saw it in my generations.
Yeah.
And that was my moment where I really started to consider Christ.
Really?
Really.
So and just talk about that, because obviously we have these ideas and beliefs. And honestly, we could even have sincere professions,
right?
And I think that was probably around the time where we kind of came into, we got a chance to meet, and I'm like, who's this girl? Who this little pregnant girl walk around here with this sack of shame all over?
Right. You know, you're like, I want to give my life to Christ with this belly. So my sin goes before me.
Yes.
You can see that I have sinned.
And like I said, that's our language, and we can really identify, but most people identify with the guilt, the burden, the shame, and whatever their belief is. So for you was like, now I remember, because you was coming around, sniffing around, you know, looking for God, and then it was like a disappearing phase. I was like, man, I guess you don't want Jesus, you know, I guess not.
And I was trying to make it work with his father. Mm. And he was going to his church, grew up there, was a musician there.
Ah.
And in my mind, I always thought throughout the entire pregnancy, maybe it will work.
Mm.
Maybe just, you know, if I continue to go to his church.
Yeah.
And then there was a moment where I realized he actually doesn't have Christ.
Ooh, there we go.
Do I leave that behind and continue my pursuit of Christ? Or do I continue down this lane?
Yeah.
And I had a decision to make.
This is so good. This is so good because it really does tie an authentic pursuit of God. Understanding that, you know, even in my attempts to follow God, I just missed it. Mm-hmm. Right? And this, I didn't know him. I didn't know his ways. I was weaker than I thought I was.
Yes.
These are all the dynamics in the faith that are just really convoluted and most people don't understand. Maybe I really need to be born again. Maybe my intentions are right, but I clearly don't have something. I'm missing something here. That is so wonderful. And I think that was, you know, obviously you made your way back and got built up and bumped your head against a few more walls.
I did.
But what's going on, everybody? David Tyree here, your favorite Super Bowl 42 champion, author of The Greatest Catch in Super Bowl History. But here's the catch for today. I want you to take a moment. Think about what it's going to take for you to unlock the next step of mastery within your team, your organization, even your small business. Visit DavidTyree85.com and check out some of these keynotes. Elevate integrity. Talk about self-awareness as a superpower. How to position your managers to be more self-aware and well-positioned for growth, advancement, and sustainability. Oh my goodness, Real Men Work. This is geared toward all of our men having the right attitude and disposition about work. This is for everyone looking to be the best, the peak pinnacle parent, the peak pinnacle father, the peak pinnacle leader. Make sure you check that out. And my absolute favorite, The Art of Being Coachable. This is something that all of us need. We lean in on humility, self-awareness, accountability. It's how to be adaptable. Make sure you check out the website. We want to be an absolute asset to your growth and your high performance. DavidTyree85.com. Now kind of moving this in the ecosystem of your life, your journey, now single parent, getting stable in your faith. Professionally, are you wrestling with man, I was supposed to be a veterinarian. Now, did you find meaning immediately in your professional pursuit? And how was it? How much you gonna make, right? So we talk about college, it's ROI, right? And then maybe you don't have a big set of financial bills, but typically alcohol addiction and certifications lead into things like social work, clinical, obviously clinical therapy and things of that nature, not the most high paying things. Right. And we live out here in a high pay, high rent district.
So Northeast region, trying to make it.
Single parent. Mm-hmm. So how did you kind of overcome that? Were you satisfied? Mm-hmm. What is the at this stage, it sounds like there's a lot of hope, expertise, uncertainty. Mm-hmm. What was that stage like?
So after graduating my master's program, I didn't even think once about veterinary school. I had a son. There's no veterinary school in New Jersey. I would have to leave my village here, my people that I've made in Christ here, and go somewhere else. Gotcha. It made no sense to me. It made no sense.
Just practical. I can tell you got a nice little practical flow.
Yes.
Like, you know what? That ain't right. This ain't working.
It's not working.
You know, we share a lot in common in that way. Like, I was in jail at 24 years old. I was like, I'm not good at life. No. You know, I mean, I've been successful, but I'm clearly not good at life. I'm in jail, right? Like, you know, like, and people miss those simple opportunities to rightly assess themselves. And they miss growth opportunities. Mm-hmm. But please go ahead. You know, so you're talking about, hey, just the reality of having a child brought real sobriety.
Yes.
And so you leaned in your master's, your certifications. Mm-hmm. And how has that professional journey been from a standpoint of like, man, is it more gratifying? Mm-hmm. What has been the stages of experience and job opportunities and finding worth, and eventually, you know, like I said, like and tie it together with meeting Mr. 2B.
Yes, I'll tie it in. So once I got to the profession, I had no idea I needed a license. I was going to be a veterinarian.
Yeah.
I had to find that on along the way. And I really bless God because he put people in place for me outside of Christ, like people in my workplace. So I went to work at a methadone clinic.
Oof. Woo! That's a nasty one.
That is. I worked there for 6 months praying, believing that I would be removed. I applied for a job. I needed 1 year experience post-master's. I had 6 months. The place hired me. The company hired me, and I ended up working in psych rehab. And that's what made me get that certification in psychiatric rehab.
Excellent.
They paid for it. They made a way for me. Now when I look back in hindsight, Jesus was setting me up.
Come on, sis.
He was setting me up. I got a life coach certification just because I'm thinking I have a licensure in alcohol and drug.
Yes.
I work with a lot of people who have mental health diagnoses. Mm. I can't diagnose, but I do work with them. I mean, a lot of times they come hand in hand.
So that good.
Someone's depressed, they're drinking.
Yes.
Someone's anxious. Sasha, what works for my anxiety is marijuana.
There you go.
So I knew over time, looking back now, wow, Jesus set me up from the beginning.
Yeah.
I got certified. Then I became a life coach. So I could be able to tap into these different individuals that needed help. Uh-huh. And I mean, along the way and how I met my husband, you know, it's just, let me tell you, it's a funny story.
Go ahead.
It's a funny story. So I walk in to church and I see this chocolate guy. I said, oh, that's my type. Literally. Let's be authentic. I walk in, I see this chocolate guy. I say, oh, wow, that's a C. Because we got types.
Mm-hmm.
We all have types.
Come on,
we don't
now.
Want to, but we got types.
I definitely do. I definitely do.
And as soon as he stood up, I said, oh, no, he's chubby.
Tell the truth.
I said, Jesus, that's not it.
Tell the truth. You're a little thin man. This little thin man, like, he going to break me.
But we became really good friends.
That's good.
Really, really, to the point where he would call me all the time. One thing that... But
was he annoying?
I never found it annoying.
That's great. That's great.
I said, wow, he cares. Hey.
That's fantastic because I found him annoying for 20 years. And but he is very sincere. Mm-hmm. He is very like, man, like what makes him amazing is what's awesome, but annoying definitely creeps in there. And you know, it's not overwhelming annoying. It's just like, yo, nah, this is fantastic. So you so having he, this fantastic experience moment. Relation with him. Go ahead.
He had a moment too. He walked in and said, oh, light skin, curly hair. He saw me pick up that baby carrot. He said, nope, not in it, Jesus. when we think about
tell
it.
Tell the truth.
We talk about it all the time. We said, we both have the same night. Yes. That same night, both of us had a moment.
Picked up that baby carrot like, nah, I'm good.
He said, nah, I see what we're not going to do.
That's a little extra work right there. That's somebody else's child.
But we became really good friends. And eventually, someone made a suggestion.
Yeah.
And to him.
Yep.
And then another person made a suggestion. Why don't you consider Sasha?
Yeah.
And then another person. And I, at this point, I'm open.
Yeah.
Whoever.
Yeah. Good for, see, and that's, let me help people out real quick. Let me help people out. You know, there's a good old scripture that says, if you're willing and obedient, you'll eat the good of the land. Mm-hmm. And when you say open, I consider willing.
Yes.
Meaning like, too often our preconceived ideas about what we want and what we feel like we should have mm-hmm. closes off the possibility for something really wonderful and magical.
It does.
And that's really something like from relationships to life to business. Have an open, right? Like have that open disposition, have a willing disposition. It doesn't mean that it has to be.
Right.
But if you're closed off to the idea, you and it's like I said, it's like, okay, I like that, but there's something missing. Mm-hmm. And I think that's real. I think that's real relationships. I think that's real job opportunities. There's something probably missing that will be shaped along the way if we're committed. If we're committed,
you
right?
Stay committed.
So that's wonderful. So y'all obviously end up making this beautiful now married, three children together, getting great things done. Let's talk about who you are in the marketplace and like okay, so we talk about drug and alcohol. Like I never got into the deeper. There's a whole spectrum of interaction. There's a whole spectrum of mental health issues. Where do you find the most purpose? Like, because you're in a purpose-driven space, right? You have to be highly compassionate, but you're also giving insight in around areas that you know to be detrimental, right?
Yes.
Like, so we talk about judgment, compassion. Mm-hmm. And I know you're not always giving, it's definitely, you know, like I said, we're not giving, you know, clinical, you know, in the psych realm, you're very clear about that. Mm-hmm. We're not giving diagnosis, but you know, you kind of understand how to move around these spaces. Mm-hmm. What is most important when you're in service to people with these, you know, with these challenges, with these addictions, in these recovery spaces? What do you find to be the most important tool that you bring up from your toolkit?
Confidence.
Ooh.
We lack so much confidence. Understandably, I mean, when you think about it, people have their own experiences, their own trauma.
Correct.
They have so many things that literally have beat them down throughout their entire lives.
Mm.
And that's what got them into depression. That's what got them into drinking. That's what got the anxiety.
Yeah.
And now on mainstream social media, you have a lot of therapists talking about what happened as a child all the time.
It's true.
They're like, what happened? Well, what? How did you get here? And I think we miss out on that as adults. We want to kind of skim past that. We want to, that's the past. But it actually shaped you.
Come on now. This is something I talk about even in relation to the faith. You can't remove your formative experiences.
You can't do it.
Even if God has given you a new hope.
Yes, you can't. Like,
hey man, you've been bruised. The soul has been bruised. Mm-hmm. The spirit has been bruised. Mm-hmm. And we know, we believe that, you know, hey, you have, you know, body, soul, spirit. And if we don't tend to those untended, right, it's like you have internal damage, right? If the body can bleed internally, why couldn't the soul? Mm-hmm. So, you're alluding to all of these things.
Yes.
So you're saying that, is it confidence coming from you or reestablishing confidence for some of your clients? What is the exchange? And like, so, because either way, I think it's vital.
Mm-hmm.
But in your professional journey, is it them needing more confidence? Mm-hmm. Or is it you as a practitioner exuding the confidence that brings them to that place of understanding?
I think it's both.
Mm, it's good.
There's so many times where I learn from my clients.
Come on, sis. So I help the people out. These are missed opportunities. I tell people, I said, listen, man, I'm out here learning from everybody.
Mm-hmm.
Right now, just out here like, oh, snap. Okay, yeah. Add that to the Batman belt right there.
And it talk, I mean, even the scriptures talk about being teachable.
There you go.
There's no way I can walk in as your therapist and think I just have it all together.
There you go. There it is.
And most people don't want a therapist like that. Mm-hmm. How about that?
They really don't. It's so unattractive. Like I said, my thing is everybody has a little bit of a different personality type, archetype. We are mm-hmm. all who we are, right? And hopefully we're all on a journey to excellence, better, virtue, us, Christ. Mm-hmm. Like, man, I want to be like this dude.
Mm-hmm.
And but ultimately, I've never been attracted to anything haughty and arrogant, man. Like, mm-hmm. and sometimes confidence can be portrayed as arrogance.
It can.
Right? And I think there's a distinguishing factor. Like, you can be extremely confident. Mm-hmm. I'm at the stage at 44 years old, having some of the opportunities professionally to say, I'm that dude. I've actually walked in some spaces and been the best at something.
Yes.
I've even as a professional, athlete development, I've had one of the better departments in the NFL. Mm-hmm. But so, like, and what are some of the things? So what do you find as a practitioner of people who are available and looking for care? What are some of the non-negotiables that you would say, right? Because I think we don't all hold your certifications and some of your expertise, but mm-hmm. we're all in these spaces of serving people that we care about.
Yes.
Right. So what are some of the, if there was three things that you feel like you really should have a grip on and caring for people who are in vulnerable spaces, in mm-hmm. recovery spaces, who are still battling addictions, who are mm-hmm. still mentally impaired in some way where they're mm-hmm. fighting their way back to wholeness. Mm-hmm. What are some of the things that we should have in a toolkit to kind of like help them land those planes at certain times?
Care.
Compassion.
Patience.
Ooh, you said the P word. There it is right there, y'all. This is America's venom right there. Patience. Yes. The venom of America is patience. We're like, what do you mean?
Yes.
I'm a TikToker.
I just need the 6 seconds.
Yeah.
So what I've found in my profession is people want to be cared for.
Man.
They missed out.
Yeah.
We missed out.
Come on.
Right?
Didn't have a father.
Listen, we're trying here.
Yeah.
And we're looking from that care sometimes in unhealthy from unhealthy things.
That's very, very true.
That's my testimony, right? Looking for that love, that care.
Sure.
Right? So I'm gonna tie love and care in together because that's what we're looking
Absolutely.
For.
Absolutely.
You need to be compassionate.
Yes.
How many times, and listen, we as parents do this to our children. We just want them to get over something.
Come on, man.
Hey, come on, hurry up. But that ties right into patience.
It does.
A lot of people, when we think about, as my profession, therapy, they want to be in therapy with me forever. And I get it.
All right, so that leads me into a really good one. You got to give me this, right? So
yes.
There is a thing that I believe it's called false compassion, right? Like,
yes.
Right? Like, meaning like, okay. And you saying that, I mean, like, people can love the cuddly feeling.
That we do.
And we should. And we need it, right? It's like the comfort of a mother, right? So mm-hmm. when we're not nurtured, we're probably going to have issues of hardness mm-hmm. That makes us emotionally unavailable.
Yes.
And we begin to, kind of pour things into those wounds that mm-hmm. are really unsavory. But on the flip side, life is happening and we have to survive some of the hardness yes. that life is. How do you, knowing that you have to have the compassion and care, mm-hmm. Because I'm a father, right? And I think mothers and fathers have different attributes to bring to the table. And I think the family dynamic shapes our entire experience. Mm-hmm. So at some point, after I listen to my boy cry, right, I can recognize maybe he's emotional, right? Yes. He might be over emotional, yes. right? And I can be patient and say, hey, son, okay, are you hurt?
Mm-hmm.
And he might say, yeah, okay. And eventually I wait him out and I say, okay, are you still hurt?
Yes.
And he's like, no, but he's still crying. I'm like, okay, well, we can stop crying now. Right? And mm-hmm. I can say that gently. I've had those moments with yes. my children like, okay, what's up? Well, now we can stop crying, all right? Mm-hmm. You're doing better. Right? But at what point, even with adults, mm-hmm. right, when they want to stay in a place of, it's almost like an incubator.
Yes.
Right? Like,
we like it. We like it. So I let my clients know immediately, you're going to go off and do this on your own. Immediately. And it just establishes it in the beginning. hey, this is what we're going to do, but you're going to get to a place. And I think about it as a mom.
Sure.
One day my children are going to go off and have their own families.
Mm, this is good.
You have to be able to do well for yourself and on your own. So, yes, learn through your experiences. Get whole together again in therapy.
Sure.
Right?
Sure.
But then you're going to use these simple tools.
Yeah.
And you're going to do this on your own. We can't be coddled for the rest of our lives.
Come on.
One day we're going to be teaching, or we're going to be drinking the meat, or eating meat, moving past the milk.
There you go.
So that's one of the biggest things I established right from the beginning.
Ah, that's good. You set the right expectation.
Set the right expectation.
In the relationship. Woo! That avoids opportunities for disappointment. Mm-hmm. That's all of our disappointments in life.
Unhealthy expectations.
There it is. That's your bar. I'm telling you. What would you say at this stage? You know, like you're a mom of three. You guys are like, you know, I've watched y'all deal with the ebbs and flows in the marketplace, mm-hmm. ebbs and flows coming into a new marriage.
Yes. It's taking me 6 years. Okay.
What would you say has been your defining moment?
Mm-hmm.
You know, and this could go into life, professional. Mm-hmm. For you, what is the part where it was just like, okay, I got it. Or this is a real moment of validation. What is your defining moment?
It's so interesting you asked this question because it happened 2 weeks ago.
2 weeks ago.
I had a defining moment because my prayer before the Lord was, I want to be a better wife.
Mm.
Now, I understand the intimacy aspect.
Sure.
I want to get to Christ. The way to do that is through his people.
Yeah.
And one big way to do that is through your spouse.
Come on, Sister Socha.
And I realized through my experiences and my trauma, and I say it like that because we like to use that as a crutch.
Yeah, well, there we go. And it's a real thing, but
it's a real
can
thing.
Be.
It could be a crutch, and we can't say that all the time. At some time in your life, you have to move past that.
That's so good.
And I finally have moved past that.
That is wonderful.
I am no longer thinking, well, this is how my mom was a wife. Or, well, I was a single mother, so I can be independent.
Yep.
Or, well, I'm in leadership in my job, so I can't act like the leader in my house.
Yeah.
I just got to this point where I understood, man, intimacy with Christ is through his people. And mm-hmm. what better way to love my husband?
Yeah.
The way Christ loved me.
Ooh, what we better growing way? Up. Well, listen, you were singing the toys. I don't want to grow up. I'm a Toys R Us kid.
I want to grow up.
But now you're growing up.
I'm growing up.
Well, listen, I'm going to tell you what. That's a revelation that changes your life
mm-hmm.
altogether.
Mm-hmm.
And the way that I talk about it is love is like a muscle. So when it says perfect love, it doesn't mean more. There's no moral perfection. Mm-hmm. We screwed that up at like 1.5 years old.
Right.
So now we're talking about getting whole. And mm-hmm. what I love about your journey, your career, and even what you talk about now is becoming more complete mm-hmm. in our love walk.
Yes.
Becoming more complete. And when I think about the human experience, we are broken. Like there's something that's just jacked up about us. And then we experience things. We make decisions. Because mm-hmm. I don't like to you know, when people, sometimes we say mistakes. Well, sometimes I made bad decisions. Mistakes kind of carry an air of innocence.
Mm-hmm.
How about I just jack that up,
I made that decision.
Yeah, and I made some poor decisions. I did make some mistakes because of my imperfections.
Right.
I tried to do the right thing the wrong way,
right?
And then it's just like something's happened to us. And those are the hardest things to deal with.
Mm-hmm.
But what you're talking about now is a true sense of ownership through your faith in Christ
mm-hmm.
of owning a deeper place of intimacy and union, knowing that there's a greater place possible for you.
Yes.
In your marriage.
Yes.
Man, you're going to be transformed. You
I
are,
believe
you're,
it.
You're being transformed. That's a powerful defining moment.
Mm-hmm.
That's one that every single one of us, that's what makes, man, I tell marriage is the secret sauce. I'm 20 years in June.
I'm a little young buck. We're coming up on 6.
Man, listen, I've been laying it down for a while. You know, Macaroni Tony, what they called me. So I'm so proud. I'm just so proud of this hearing more of this journey
mm-hmm.
in the marketplace. I've observed your life. You know, Busy B, Bernie B, this is my guy. We in it together.
Mm-hmm.
But watching this journey has been powerful because God gives us, like, you get married for differences. We struggle with everything that's different about our spouses. We're like, why ain't you like me? What is your problem? Can't you see how great I am? And we both do it. Like,
right.
Like we both sides do it. And then there's something about our spouse that might be unbecoming, right? Whether it's a weight thing, whether it's a habit, whether it's, and we need to love them
love them.
And give them the space to excel.
Yeah.
And right. And then also trust the other people that's putting a demand on them to be great as well. So give me a little bit more insight to your professional services, mm-hmm. Where people can find you, mm-hmm. and really what your some of your specializations and where people will get the most value out of working with you.
Awesome. So I'm pivoting everywhere. Not only in my marriage.
Bing, bing. She out here with the Barry said, ha, ha. We out here pivoting.
So I'm actually looking to get into some teaching, training, keynote speaking.
Oh, it's time.
I'm ready to share.
Y'all heard these butters. Come on now.
I'm ready to share all of my tools that I've gathered these last 10 years in my profession.
Excellent.
So I'm looking. You can connect with me on LinkedIn. Just look up my name, Sasha Branch, and you'll find me. But I'm ready to teach people how to do this.
Yes, fantastic. Well, it's the time. Find Sasha Branch. She's a wellspring of wisdom. She's full of compassion, full of love. She's full of God. Finally, I've been waiting. No.
Thank you for being patient with me.
And listen, thank you for being patient with your husband, Brunel, because, you know, it's really hard working with this guy. He's behind the cameras right now, huffing and puffing. But he's going to be quiet today because this is our time to shine. You know, I finally get some of the light skin side of it. You know, it's the dark side that I deal with in the branches. And I've been tired of dealing with darkness.
Listen.
No, I want to thank you so much for your life, your professionalism, your pursuit of excellence. She's extremely disciplined. We've been trying to call her out. Come on out and play into the love feast. But you know, disciplined people are extremely regimented.
Yes.
And when you're very disciplined, you could just miss opportunities to kind of get into the river of life.
Yes.
So I mean, like there's two sides. You have to be narrow to excel. But you also have to make space where that willingness mm-hmm. to like, man, what do I really need to kind of get off track so that I can actually amplify and gain greater insight. So I think it sounds like this moment is a nice little pivot for you. That's about to cause you to really blossom. So I'm excited for you. And we've been blessed by your journey, your professional insight. Hopefully y'all got it. The compassion, the care, and those are my three bars. The compassion, the care, and the patience. Patience, man, patience.
We need it.
Get those bars, put them to work. You can be well and do well. And Sasha Branch can help you. We'll check in with y'all soon. Y'all continue to get great done.